Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Down to Agribusiness podcast, joined once again by Anne Finnegan and Phelim O'Neill. Guys, good to have you on the show again. And we might lead out with the pig industry and what's happening there. Obviously, huge concern and threats to the future of the industry here in Ireland. This week, we saw the publication of the PricewaterhouseCoopers report into, I suppose, the economic fundamentals around the pig industry in Ireland. And I mean, it's relatively small in terms of pig numbers north and south. I think there's something like 230, 240 in the Republic and another maybe 50 up north. But the impact is wider than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to read that the PwC have put the economic impact of the pig sector at 1.5 billion, really significant impact. And that's, I think, taking into account the value of, pig meat sales, inputs, and the general spin-off economic activity that spins off out into the wider rural community. And like you said, Jack, it's been a really challenging 12 months for what is probably the most, it's fair to say, is probably the most resilient of all farming sectors. I mean, I remember when quotas were being abolished in dairy, and we were talking about dairy farmers needing to become more like pig farmers in terms of their efficiency, their approach to efficiency and cost management. But it certainly throws light on the scale of the sector here. You took a look, I think, in detail at, the jobs. It supports 8,000 jobs, both in terms of direct employment and indirect employment.
Correct. And of course, if you include Northern Ireland, there's probably another 2,000 jobs up in Northern Ireland. But indirectly associated with the industry, I suppose, as opposed to just the pig farmers piece. There's huge volumes of feed, which has the spin-off in terms of feed reps, sales reps, feed milling companies, etc., and all that kind of thing. And not alone that, then, of course, the whole banking sector and what's involved there. But the one interesting point, and I'll come back to you, maybe we'll come back to you in terms of the solutions or some of the funding pieces that are kind of being talked about at the moment. Obviously, there's some on the table already, but there's more kind of maybe at play in Ireland and internationally. But in terms of the marketing piece here around, and Phelim, I might bring you in on this as well, in terms of the concentration on the Asian countries. I think it's of the pig meat exports, I think about 50% go to Asia. I think China, something like 36, 40% of them going solely to China, So there's a huge dependence. There was and is a huge dependence on the Chinese in terms of the pig meat exports. Obviously, there's been big changes in the Chinese industry, the pig sector industry, after kind of the African swine fever episode, etc., and the kind of, I suppose I call it, the revolution within the pig sector over there. I mean, that whole dependency on one particular country and the risk associated with a large dependency on one country, Anne, is there lessons in that for other sectors, or is there anything going to change that dependency for the pig meat sector, I suppose, on China?
I think all sectors have to look at, and every business has to look at the dependency and how far you're spreading your business. And the more diversified it is, the better it is, and the more robust your business model always is. The first thing we have to say is that Asia and China have been very good to the pig sector. Mm-hmm. And when imports were strong, Irish pig farmers did very well, and it worked very well for us. And I suppose, you know, it would be interesting to look back over our export figures. I mean, if you look at pre-2014 and Russia's war in Crimea and their invasion in Crimea and the wave of sanctions that hit Russia at that time, prior to that, Russia actually had been a growing market for the Irish pig meat sector, and suddenly we became locked out of that. And in fairness to the sector, it did find additional markets and new markets for that product, and it upped the product that it was selling into Asia and China. But you're right, the rebuilding in China has really posed challenges, not just for the Irish sector, but for the European sector. And we can see that playing out. I mean, you know, what's happening in Ireland is manifesting right across the EU, and probably the challenge for Ireland, like we have for our wider agriculture sectors, we don't have the population base, so we are so reliant on exports. But I think, yeah, it absolutely does make other sectors sit up and listen. And look, there's a broader policy in China as well around self-sufficiency. And, you know, the world is changing, and the war at the moment has probably brought that to light in a very real way for all of us. But we had been moving towards, I suppose, a greater degree of protectionism in markets, regionalization, you know, moving somewhat, not totally, but somewhat away from the globalized model that everybody's accustomed to and that served particularly Ireland as a small open economy so well. So it does provoke, I think, a pause and somewhat of a rethink.
I was just going to come in, Jack, there. A couple of things to keep in mind here. You know, at the height of the ASF outbreak in China, they were importing 45% of all the pig meat that was traded in world markets. So they essentially set the world pig meat market. Now, that has plummeted in recent months. And in fact, I was just looking there before we came on air at the figures for the first quarter of this year. EU pig meat exports for the first 3 months of 2022 were 353,000 tonnes. That's down 63% on the same period last year, when it was 958,000 tonnes. So you're effectively looking, that market is now a third of what it was, and Ireland has taken its share of the hit in that respect. Ireland had become the largest volume market for pig meat in 2020 and 2021, and the reality now is that market isn't there. The big question is, and looking at this strategically globally, and just picking up on what you were saying there, Anne, about national food security, and the Chinese are particularly engaged in this, you know, will it ever return to the volumes it was at? Because there's no doubt that China has completely restructured this industry from what was described as a backyard type industry to now a very, very sophisticated biosecure sector. So I think there has to be a question mark on the viability of China in the long term as being a consistent market. They may dip in and out from time to time, but I'm not sure it's one that we could build an entire business on.
Yeah, no, definitely the competitiveness of it is definitely under question at the moment. And I mean, in terms of the funding piece, we might come back to Phelim's question in another podcast in terms of about the future for China for pig meat among others. But in terms of the funding piece, you took a kind of a whip around in terms of Europe, in terms of what governments are doing, and I suppose what the Irish government are doing, or what they're being called on to do.
Yeah, so, and again, this comes back to the PwC report. You know, they looked at what supports were put in place. I suppose, really, look, as this crisis started to unfold, there was no unilateral approach to supporting the sector at EU level. And in fact, there was some resistance, particularly from countries that are, you know, that have a real competitive advantage in pig meat production, and they didn't want to undermine that advantage. So, like, ultimately, what countries seem to have done is focused on the EU state aid temporary framework that was introduced for COVID-19 and to support companies through the consequences of the pandemic, and they've relied on that. And I suppose, look, there's been a range of different approaches. Germany and the Netherlands have just, you know, funneled pig farmers into the general scheme that they had operational for all SMEs. Other companies have put together like bespoke aid packages, some of them based on cash flow and on the losses, some of them related to stock levels, and some of them putting in place flat rate payments per sow. So a range of different measures there. I suppose PwC did also look at, you know, what Ireland has done and what Ireland's options are. And I suppose they've really concluded that, you know, what the government have done so far hasn't been enough in terms of the pig exceptional payment scheme. This is the €20,000 per producer that was already announced. And they're saying that, look, some farmers are still actually awaiting that money, but that it's not sufficient to plug in any way, to plug the gap. They're also still waiting on clarity on payments under the EU Exceptional Aid Adjustment Package. And this is the EU package that has recently been agreed. This is going to deliver €70,000 per producer. So again, the detail and the timing of those payments haven't been clarified. And again, they're saying, look, even at that rate, it's still not enough. I mean, the other options then are the Brexit Adjustment Reserve, which PwC are pointing to as like having really significant potential to support farmers here, and also the proposal put forward by the IFA in relation to the Pig Stability Fund that they have proposed. But I suppose, you know, they did caution around taking on additional debt and some of the government schemes, you know, that look at, so the Brexit investment loan scheme that looks at lower cost finance, just saying, look, that the accumulated losses are going to pose a challenge in terms of repayment capacity going down the line here. And I suppose that's part of the crux of the issue here as well, Jack, and particularly because this is such a highly efficient sector. And even in our discussions, we were talking a lot about the average performance in pigs. Yeah. I suppose in my experience, there's a vast difference between the top performers, the bottom performers, and the average, and how the average relates to the top and the bottom. Okay. And I think, you know, a lot of the bottom performers are being seriously challenged here, and they really are caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of, you know, investing your way out of this or taking on additional debt may be really challenging for some of those operators, and much less challenging for some of the more efficient and larger operators.
Yeah, and of course the bottom line is, you know, the energy piece is affects the pig industry big time in terms of the heat that's needed for, we'll say, for that whole process. The feed piece is impacting on the industry, and the you know, obviously the Ukraine piece and what happens there is very much. A source of worry for the industry. So like the couple of the big things that are affecting that sector in terms of imported energy and imported feed, you know, there's no real a bright spot on the horizon for them that they can kind of look to. I mean, we saw Brent crude guys reaching a new high for 2022, I think, this week, and obviously that has been reflected at the petrol pumps and diesel pumps around the country. So is it it's fair to say those two big clouds that are hanging over the sector, even if price rises, and it's still going to be challenging, like, is it?
Yeah, I mean, feed accounts for 65% of costs, of variable costs in pig production. So that's really the big issue here, along with the output price. Obviously, the feed cost, that is the biggest determinant for pig farmers. And you're right, you know, there's no silver lining apparent there. And I suppose, look, there's opportunities for increasing efficiencies, particularly for some operators, but it's a challenging time to look at that, you know, and to look at taking on additional debt and investing in improving your efficiency. But there are substantial differences between pig farmers in terms of their feed costs, and that range is quite eye-watering in terms of what it means to the bottom line. But absolutely, no real hope. And I suppose the big hope in the industry is that the output price increases and that continues to increase. But we're seeing that output price going to levels that are beyond where it's been before. I suppose one of the, and again in our discussions yesterday, one of the silver linings out there has to be, you know, when you look at the cost of living crisis that is happening across the board, you would expect some switching from red meat to white meats into pig and poultry, which are generally cheaper meats. And you would imagine that should happen at some point, and it should, the sector should see additional demand right across the board. So I think that's one to watch. But obviously that has a knock-on effect on other sectors as well.
You've a piece on the food price index this week.
Yeah, I was just to add to Anne's point there before we went to it briefly. I think that is already happening in the red meat sector, where beef and lamb are very expensive meats at the minute. And I think the Kantar data would show, particularly in the UK, that the volumes being purchased have dropped back there. And there is no doubt some element of switching. Yeah, just picking up on the food price index, Jack, interesting one this, because if you look at the headline figure, we have it as slight fall in the food price index, and that's the second month in the row, but of course they're coming down from record highs, and they're only in a couple of categories. The ones that have actually dropped is the dairy sector, where there's a 5.1% drop, and vegetable oils, which is an even bigger one, 8.2% drop. Now those are two sectors that have been in a period of rapid growth, so there's a little bit of a levelling off there in those. But on the other hand then, and this is one that's very relevant to the discussion we've had there in the pig meat sector, cereals are continuing to increase, and they set another new record high in May, where the index hit 173.4 points. This is 29%, almost 30% above where it was in May 2021, and that is what's feeding into the very expensive feed for the intensive sectors. The other one too, and we have a good number of beef farmers and producers listen to this podcast, the beef sector has continued to rise as well. The index reached an all-time high in May this year at 122 points, which was up from 121.4 the previous months, 14 points ahead of the same time last year. So it's a bit of a mixed bag there. The headline figure's down, but certainly there's a very strong performance in cereals and beef.
You were just picking up on the red meat price falling. I mean, that's a European piece more than an Irish piece just now, Phelim, is it, in terms of what did I hear? Is Germany well back in the last couple of weeks?
Well, there's actually, and again, it's something that we've touched on in a business brief this week. It's actually something that's of great interest to Irish farmers. For the first time since 2011, the Irish R3 steer beef price has went past that of the UK. Now, we have seen a gap there of up to €1 a kilo at several times over the course of that period, in that 11 years in between. But you're right to highlight the situation in Germany. And if you look at the Irish price now, for the past 6 months, we have lagged dramatically behind the UK and the European average. But we had a very fast period of increase there over a few weeks. It's consolidated now in the last week or so. But that the result of that price surge for Irish cattle at Irish factories has meant that we have actually caught up with the export markets. And it has also coincided with the fact that the German market is seriously out of kilter. It was well over €1 a kilo better than the Irish price. It has fallen very sharply in recent weeks. Now, that is pretty unique to Germany. Other Central European markets, I'm thinking of Poland, I'm thinking of the Netherlands, thinking even of France, like they are all still remaining very, very strong. But the reality is Irish beef now is at long last on a par with these and on a par with the UK. And that's something that will be welcomed by Irish farmers, and indeed will be said it's long overdue.
One potential piece that might challenge that, Phelim, is your piece on the New Zealand trade deal that is expected to conclude, you're saying, by maybe the end of June.
Yeah, I just picked up this week that the New Zealand meat industry are actually expressing a bit of concern that it's not, this negotiation isn't going their way to the extent that they would like. I suppose we would say they've been somewhat spoiled by the generous access that they secured to the UK in a very fast negotiation. The negotiation with the EU has been going on since 2018, and the ambition is that they'll bring it to a conclusion fairly shortly. But the New Zealand meat industry, their trade association, is not happy with the offer that's coming from Europe in terms of red meat access. They're probably okay on sheep meat because they haven't been filling the quota in recent years anyway, but the reality is they have next to no, they have a tiny amount of beef that gets into the European Union, and they're looking for a very significant quota there. Why is that important? The New Zealand beef price is actually one of the lowest in the world among the major exporting nations at the minute. Their main markets are North America for manufacturing beef and the Asian markets, particularly China. And I've no doubt that given the price disparity between them, New Zealand beef with a generous trade quota, a generous quota to the European Union, you would see increasing quantities of it here as well. Of course, it will be coming into the UK, and this is the sort of the sting for Irish farmers. You know, the fact that there will be New Zealand beef circulating in the next 12 months in the UK market means that there will be big pressure put on Irish beef sales to the UK. So that's a trade deal. It's one of those boring features of life, Jack, that we delve into from time to time. It's not something that we see in terms of an immediate impact on a marketplace, but it's one that will actually shape the marketplace certainly into the medium and longer term future.
Boris survived, Phelim. Brexit, where is it at this week?
Boris survived. The next question now is, will the protocol survive? We understand that the UK are on the point of launching their unilateral amendments to the protocol, and that's something that would be a serious concern to Irish farmers, because the reality of life is, you know, the deal with the protocol is that while Northern Ireland, part of the UK, it's also part of the island of Ireland, and to keep life simple and straightforward from a trade perspective, particularly in agri-food, it is treated as effectively part of the single market. The other side of that deal is that the UK government agreed that they would impose, if you like, EU border controls at Northern Ireland points of entry on trade, all trade, and that includes trade from the rest of the UK, from Britain. And that is something that has went down very badly politically with some sections in Northern Ireland. And it is, but on the other hand, it works very, very well from an industry point of view. It means that milk and lambs from the north can flow into the southern factories for processing. No questions asked, no difficulties. Similarly, industry can bring product in from Britain, process it in the north, and send it out then to either European or back to the UK again, whichever suits, wherever the best price is available. So that's what we have with the protocol. On the other hand, it is messy for the supermarkets that have distribution depots in the UK, where they have a big number of products of animal and plant origin that require certification. That is a huge, almost an impossible bureaucratic job, but it is, I suppose, the reality of the rest of the UK being outside the single market. The bottom line is, if the UK goes ahead with this legislation and it takes effect, then it effectively overrules the protocol. And that basically throws everything up in the air again in relation to Brexit, the trading relationship between Ireland and Britain, between the European Union and the UK. And that's something that it can only have downsides for farmers. For farmers in the north that want to send products to the south, for farmers, you know, and if you think of the big dairy processors, Jack, north in the northern half of the island, you know, they're very heavily reliant on milk from the north to keep their supplies going. And that's just something that is put at risk by all of this. Of course, this has been running for 6 years now, and you might roll your eyes there and say, oh God, not another Brexit story. But the reality is that these threats are there all the time, and it only takes the thing to collapse, and then we see the terrible consequences of it. Thankfully, they've been avoided so far. Hopefully, that'll continue to be the case. But the bottom line is, if they're not, then it's bad news for Irish farmers.
Yeah, and potentially big implications, as you say, for the likes of Lakeland Dairies, we'll say, who process a lot of milk, and a lot of milk travels over and back across the from north into the south and vice versa. So it might force them into investment in Banbridge or some of their other sites to be able to handle that milk. But like, that won't be done overnight, Phelim, either. You know, I mean, that's
experience south of the border has shown us, just an investment in a major dairy processing facility isn't something you click your fingers and make happen. There's quite a planning process to be gone through in the north as well.
Correct. Yeah, we saw this week was interesting, just when you mentioned it, that the Bellevue plant, the long awaited and much maligned Bellevue plant, cheese plant, the new joint venture with Aware in Holland and Glanbia has started this week. The development, the construction on site in Bellevue has started. But it's as you say, that was announced in 2019, January 2019. And here we are in June 2022. And they're just beginning to start the process when they should be making cheese at this stage, like, you know.
Yep. That's the reality.
Last one, and I just bring in on the infant formula piece in the US, another kind of international story that we have this week, in terms of, look at it, all stems from that bacteria that was found in the Abbott plant in the US in terms of infant formula, significantly reducing the output of infant formula in the US, and they're looking elsewhere for products to keep baby milk on the shelves.
Yeah, so it is really quite incredible. I'm not too far. I haven't got baby bottles too far behind me. So like, the thought that parents in the US were facing empty shelves. I read this week that the start of May, 43% of infant formula was out of stock nationwide in the US. Just incredible. So President Biden brought in this Operation Fly formula to take infant formula in from around the world. The US only imports about 2% of the infant formula it requires. And the market is very heavily concentrated. So almost, or over 90% of infant formula is supplied in the US by four companies: Abbott, Mead, Johnson, Nestle, and Perrigo. And the challenge there is it's so concentrated because actually 45% of babies in the US get their infant formula through a supplemental nutrition program called the WIC. And Abbott dominates that program. So it accounts for 50% of the formula that is that supplemental formula that's supplied. And they have a 50% overall, 50% market share emanating out of that. So the first formula to fly into the US is going this week from the UK, and it's going from Kendamil. We wrote about this in the past few weeks in terms of the company's intentions. Under Operation Fly formula, they have been accepted. They've got FDA approval, and their product will be on the shelves of 1,900 Target supermarkets around the US in the coming weeks. So it's a huge opportunity for what is a really interesting infant formula business and a really recent startup and challenger brand in the area. And interestingly, they supply both classic and organic product in the UK. And because of the UK's ruling that organic milk is UK organic milk moves to antibiotic free from the 1st of April, that has actually allowed Kendamil to get their organic label in there into the US as well. But I think this whole issue is going to provoke much greater discussion about the concentration of production and of the market concentration in the US and the standards around infant formula, which are different to the standards that we're used to in the EU. But, this could have wider implications outside of the US in looking at this market. And I suppose it's one for farmers to actually, you know, we supply a huge amount of milk into the infant formula business in Ireland, but, how much do we actually understand behind the actual business itself, and particularly the marketing, the market development, which has come under huge scrutiny, particularly in developing countries in recent years. So I think it's definitely one that farmers need to be attuned to and keep on top of, because it does, the income from infant formula flows back to them in terms of milk price.
Yeah, no, very definitely. Ross McMahon, the son of a farmer, Irish entrepreneur, and of course he does hold an ag science degree. He will be delighted with that big deal to get that infant formula into the US under Operation Fly. Folks, we're out of time. We better close it up, but lots more in the Farmers Journal this week, and lots more in-depth and insights into what's happening in the agribusiness world. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.